Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Welcome back to another week of liberty. We are doing everything we can here to reclaim the republic, but we need your help. And so the best way to get your help is probably to get you equally informed, because I've got that premise, reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. That way, once you're on board, or once you at least have the same kind of information that we are trying to assert here, then I truly believe that you will become a part of the solution. That said, the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. So both ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and Mobius Strip Press is where you can find all the content you need regarding Reclaiming the Republic. Three reasons why you want to download the podcasts, which are on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. This is the only show on air anywhere that is actually asserting a constitutional solution to federal government overreach. Secondly, the content on this show refers to content on previous shows. So the reason why you want to download this is so that you kind of garner and understand, because some of these shows span across multiple shows. They also refer to other shows in the background, or I should say, you know, maybe months ago or weeks ago or what have you. So to understand, you need to kind of stay abreast with all of these things. And bear in mind, the content on this show, for the final reason, it is not perishable. So as we talk about these important things in the news, I put it into a constitutional context, because these things kind of repeat themselves. We've been in this long kind of car accident, or this carnage that is just on display, that has been happening for years and years and years, that people are just so, entangled in watching and just kind of watching this carnage happening. And I truly believe that all of the news that is getting you to engage in the little distractions actually keeps us from getting together, uniting, and fighting and killing the beast. So as I talk about these types of things in context to the news and the Constitution, then I truly believe you can start understanding why we need to kind of really focus on getting the job done, instead of being pulled into the, if you want to call it, the water cooler comments of the day, or whatever the grapefruit of the day or news of the day is. And so those are three primary reasons why you should and want to download these podcasts. Also on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, I also have that YouTube video that is, it's not viral, but it should be viral if it's the most relevant video out there that actually speaks to what our problem is and how we can take back our constitutional republic. Then, as far as I'm concerned, that should be a viral video, but it won't become viral until you actually watch it. Just watch the first 30 minutes of the video I have a link on the Take Action page. So if you go to that page on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, then you will actually find that video link and be able to enjoy what I consider a very informative and very concise briefing on what our real problem is and how we have to move forward. So there's another little tidbit for you that is out on that website. As I looked through the news, and I did scan the news, there is no sign of the federal government disbanding any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. So what does that mean? That means that we still have to continue to do the job. And as a matter of fact, even if Trump does get rid of the Department of Education, the next administration that replaces him will reinstitute everything that he undid, because the constitutional line has to be drawn by the states. It's nice that the president can abide by that, but he has no legislative authority. So the states actually have to force Congress to do their job, and it is the state's job to make that happen. That is exactly what Madison did in 1798. along with Jefferson. And if those have been listening to the show have probably already heard those citations from the Kentucky and Virginia resolution. I do have a new question. If anybody wants to call, I would just like to know what or where in the Constitution does the federal government get the authority to create and manage land reservations for any race, culture, or what have you, whether that's parks or EPA for some spotted owl or whether that's human beings. It doesn't really matter. I would like to know what or where in the Constitution the federal government is given and granted that authority from the states. And so let me also point out that we've got a Red Pill Expo that's coming up, and I would highly recommend you getting your tickets. It's in Spokane. Go to Red Pill Expo, I think, or just Google Red Pill Expo, and you'll be able to find G. Edward Griffin. G. Edward Griffin, who I've had on the show. I think he is the primary supporter for this, and it's a part of his Red Pill University. It is a huge deal. It may be, when you look at the price, it may seem like it has a high price, but as far as I'm concerned, if you look at how many days that you're there and what you're going to be exposed to and what they're covering, you really need to go. All those conservatives that want to be in the know, and it's going to be a great networking place because there's people that are coming from all around the world to be a part of that. I also want to add that I'm hoping that we actually get these Red Pill University expos as a part of these rodeos that I'm doing. That way we can implement a ground game for Red Pill University as we go out to these different states. As I've been saying, tomorrow is when I will be covering the election endorsements for Idaho. Yes, tomorrow's May 1st, and that's 2 weeks out from the election. And that way, if you want to help, I would highly recommend, and I would ask, beg, plead for you to send a couple of bucks to the constitutional candidates that I'm going to identify in these races, because I believe that we can actually get the same kind of impact if everybody was sending just a couple of bucks. It doesn't have to be a lot. If we get lots of people to provide some kind of contribution to these people that are willing to support and commit to supporting the Constitution, they deserve to be there to actually function in the capacity that they're committed to doing. And what they're committed to doing is calling for an audit on the Constitution and supporting Republic Review. With that, let me move into what I was covering last week. And I'm really sorry I ran out of time. I know I get derailed whenever I go over to Facebook or Twitter and somebody DMs me. And then I look at that, and next thing you know, oh, I got to come back on air. And so it's kind of hard to kind of shuffle. It would be great to have staff to kind of do the filtering so that they could just provide me with the information. But this is really not a high employment opportunity here. What this is really just a single effort in trying to help educate the masses, you, the Republic, and what we need to do in getting the Republic back on track. Well, so as I was trying to get through this, I will tell you that it will take a while for me to get through this stuff. That is only because there are that many different webs and that many different spokes on this wheel. I don't think that people really realize just how intricate this web is as far as this globalist communist movement. I know that many others have spoken regarding this, and I know that my book covers this. I actually included a lot of this in the very first section of my first book, and it was basically the historical narrative of liberty so that people could really understand where liberty came from, because many people look at what Thomas Jefferson actually penned in the Declaration of Independence was not necessarily a first-time thought. Most people heard that George Mason actually made a very similar statement that we were all created equal in the Virginia Constitution. They had a constitutional convention before the Declaration of Independence. However, in 1770, I forget the lady that Thomas Jefferson was defending. She was a mulatto. And the law back in those days were that if you were 31 and a half years old and mulatto and a slave, then you could become, well, you're supposed to become free by the law, because half of your life, the first half of your life, you're a slave, and the second half of your life, you're supposed to be free. Well, the slave master wasn't going to let her go. So Jefferson defended her, and oops, we're at a hard break. And so because we're at a hard break, I'm going to have to come back with what Jefferson actually did in that defense, so that we understand the history or the roots of that all men were created equal. And I will be right back after a word from our sponsors and some of these promos. Thank you so much. Did you know your overall health is connected to your dental health? As you get older, this becomes more and more important. If you're like me, going to the dentist can be terrifying. So for me to maintain my dental and overall health, I need a great dentist and staff who are sensitive to my fear, pain, and even my fear of the cost of dental work. This is why it took me almost 2 years to find a great dentist after moving into this area. Bottom line, I need a great dentist just to get into the chair, even for a regular cleaning. This is why I personally recommend Dr. Vaughn Tracy as not only a great dentist, but a great patriot and a dentist who cares about your comfort and health. You can find him at VaughnTracyDDS.com. That's VaughnTracyDDS.com. Then you can agree with me, it's great to have a great dentist. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their Constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK.
or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
As I was going into break, excuse me, I was just telling you about Thomas Jefferson and this case with a mulatto, that he was basically in the throes of fighting her master. I forget the gal's name, and it's in my first book, but he was fighting this slave master who did not want to free this slave who had lived 31 and a half years. And by the law, if you were a mulatto, the last half of your life, you were supposed to be able to live free. And apparently he was kind of an outlier, not allowing that to happen. And most people didn't know that mulattoes, there were quite a few blacks back in those days. And actually, even before the edict, and I think the final edict was in the 1660s, I believe they started in the 1620s of the movement for slavery, but the final edict throughout the colonies from England was, I believe, the 1660s, where blacks were going to be permanent slaves and no longer indentured servants. Some of the colonies were using all different races for indentured servants to get work done, and then they would be given 10, 100, or however many acres. Anyway, I digress. Thomas Jefferson argued in that argument under the logic and rationale of natural law that all men and all people were created equal, and that nobody was truly a slave. It was only the conditions of how you were born, but that didn't mean that that person that was born in a slave family was necessarily castigated or held to that particular standard. It was just the unfortunate circumstances of the birth. Not that that person was, you couldn't have been born somewhere else in another family and not been a slave. And so as he argued this, he ended up losing the case, but it created such a fervor that it actually grew legs. George Mason used it, I believe he was the one that inserted it into the Virginia Constitutional Convention. And then during the Declaration of Independence, that's when Thomas Jefferson resurrected his concept and actually built upon it. And I would invite anybody to go read the actual original Declaration of Independence, where Thomas Jefferson does not hold back his sentiments and feelings about slavery. It was because of the South that many of those paragraphs or portions were taken out or edited out, because they didn't like the direction that this liberal up in the North, and that was the classic version of liberal, that people should be free and not enslaved to a person or a state. And so if you read that, and I just invite you to go read Jefferson's original draft of the Declaration of Independence, and it will, I believe, begin to open your minds that Thomas Jefferson was not the tyrant. As a matter of fact, when he came back from Paris after his emissary time, when he was the ambassador for America, I remember in reading Dumas Malone that the slaves that were working at Monticello came down and they picked him up and carried him on their shoulders, because he was pretty well loved in how he treated and how he helped and so forth. And George Washington was the same way. If you read Ron Chernow's book on George Washington and his biography. So these men weren't necessarily tyrants. I will even point out on George Washington, and I know I'm digressing off the topic here, but I want to get into history. I like talking about this stuff. If you read that biography, George Washington would not take a second to shoot a deserter in the back, but he would beg and plead if his slaves ran away and were on the lam and he could find them, because he knew that if they got caught, they would be held by a different slave master and they would not be treated. And I'll even say the word loved, the way George Washington loved his, and I hate to say the word slaves, but a lot of these framers were definitely forward thinkers. That's one of the reasons why when George Washington died, he said, upon Martha's death, my slaves can go free. And what that ended up doing was that created kind of a little cabal, because those slaves knew that, and there was rumblings about killing Martha. So Martha just said, I'm going to have to let these slaves go, which then a lot of other framers were doing something very similar. And then most of them started realizing, well, that's kind of impossible to do, because what you do is you're setting up a, you know, potential disaster where your wife, your remaining survivor ends up being threatened or what have you. So it was, as Jefferson commented, that they had the wolf by the ear. They could no longer hold it as well as let it go. And so this was the thing. And that's why reading that Declaration of Independence is very important, because these policies and these standards were put upon the colonies because of the crown. And so most people think, nah, it was just, you know, inherent. No, it was actually a crown decision. So anyway, let me get back onto this. And as I get into this, and let me kind of get into a real macro view, because in my first book, I also talked about a study that was done in the 90s where people were asked if they believed that Satan exists. And I was absolutely amazed that in this religious survey, I think it was 70% or 80% of the people that were in the survey believed that Christ exists, but less than 50% believed that Satan or Lucifer exists. And I'm going, if you have studied the scriptures, like in the Bible, I mean, Satan, you know, tempted Christ. And how could you believe in Christ and believe in that, that 40 days and 40 nights in the desert and fasting and so forth, and then believe that Satan didn't exist or he wasn't there? Was Christ making that up? And were the apostles making that up? I can understand some of the allegories or some of the stories or books that, you know, go back years and years and years, some people may have a problem with. But we've pretty much had a pretty good chain of custody from the apostles. The older books and so forth of the Bible, and as we know, if you didn't know, because I do cover it in my book, that the Bible wasn't even canonized until the 1500s. And so what we have today is the Bible. People think that that's, you know, been in existence from the beginning. They've just been adding a book until John the Revelator and the apostles died. No, that's not the case. The Catholic Church was the one that canonized the Bible, and it was King James that actually translated that into English and got it onto printing presses and so forth. But anyway, the question is, do you believe that Lucifer or Satan is real? Because that's really important, because as we start looking at the world today, how can you not look at everything that's playing and everything that's happening? Is it just a coincidence, or is everybody just happening to go along with these concepts that the Bible talked about, that in the last days, because I'm one that purports, and I will attest that these days are the last days. I do not believe that we have a lot of time. I do believe that when Israel became a nation, that was kind of a little check in the box to say, okay, that's done. And so we're looking at Gog and Magog, Russia and Persia, or Iran, looking to create an alliance for the first time in thousands of years. That's interesting. Isaiah talked about that. And this isn't really necessarily about the religion side of this. This is about the political, geopolitical happenings and why these things are happening. That is why it is important to kind of have a big macro view. And as I said, there's lots of authors that have, Mark Levin wrote a book about and strictly focused on, I think it was in his Emeritopia book. I actually covered a lot of the exact same things in my first book in 2012 when I had that published. I think it was 2013 when it came out. But all of those types of things are really important to set the stage, because we're not in these positions and in these circumstances because of a coincidence. There have been lots of players that have been behind all of this. And so I will get into the process as I did Friday. But that's why I want to give you a bigger background or a bigger picture on why this is going to take some time to get through this. And so you're more than welcome to, if you want to pipe in on this as well, you're more than welcome to call. But we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy, you need a new dentist. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google Donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. I guess I need to say thank you for tuning in. And I want to thank those who are actually out there telling others to actually listen, because Apparently, some of you have been finding that the content on this is actually really important and very relevant for us to become successful. So thank you. I can't do this without you. This is, has to be a team effort. That said, let me also back up because I'm going to do a lot of digression and I apologize. But that first section of my book, I actually had no plans to write that first section, The Historical Narrative of Liberty. And the ground I cover in that is pretty vast because I literally talk about from Adam and Eve and how liberty had kind of played a role in the development of our society, the falling of societies and so forth. And so if one understands, and like I said last week on Friday, that it was Alexander the Great spoke to Aristotle, who was his mentor, and asked, why is it that society keeps on falling for this state type of status government or communism? They didn't call it communism back then, but why was it that society kept on surrendering their liberties to these despotic types of government? And Aristotle basically explained that if you understand that the nucleus of society is the family, there is a natural tendency for one to try to extend that family love, or, you know, that parenting and the love of the parents to the child, and apply that in a form of government. And that always becomes the tyrannical, because the first parents may be really loving and caring and nurturing, but the next parents, whoever's in charge, can become very despotic. And it doesn't take long for that to happen. And history actually proves that, because societies had risen and fallen, well before Aristotle and even Plato, as I said last week, because they were already noticing that there was this trend. There's this common trend of statism and societies falling, or revolutions and so forth, because Aristotle in his book Politics talks about the two causes of revolution. So they must have had a good historical understanding of revolutions and why people revolted against their government. Those two reasons were primarily because the people were starving. And the second reason was when the people realized that those who were governing were getting fat and rich off of their hard work. And so what is it for us today, folks? Look at the payrolls and the bank accounts of our congressmen. Pretty obscene, isn't it? And how much do they make? Interesting. Well, again, I'm digressing. So we've already gotten through, I believe, the question that I kind of posed. I'm trying to paint this picture that, and I will tell you now that even though all of this has, you know, possible little grand conspiracy type of thing, I don't believe so. I don't believe that there was really this big, huge, you know, all these people knew what was going on and so forth. And this playbook has been, this big, huge cabal. I don't think so. I think that this has been driven more by Lucifer and or Satan, knowing what needs to be done by different people, getting them to do certain things and so forth. And we cannot just marginalize the fact that this entity, this evil entity, because is this a coincidence? And we're just heading into a secular, you know, chasm of crisis, or is this more of what the Bible has been telling us? And I'm going to probably lean towards what the Bible has been telling us. And so that we're in this divide right now because of secularism and because we have abandoned our Christian origins. And I'll even go as far as to say that there are plenty of people that write books about the history, and not to pick on Mark Levin, but I already mentioned him once. He's talked a lot about our history, about liberty and all of that. And I challenge anybody to find where he points to American exceptionalism, American enlightenment, and all those things that made America what it was, where he talked about the integral part that Christianity had in that. And you will probably find that there's a real lack of that. And so there's reasons why individual authors, because I understand why Mark didn't, but there's other authors that don't even talk about Christianity and how we were really a Christian nation. And I've talked about that before, and I hope to actually have Mark Urbach on, who wrote the book Believe. But anyway, as I said last week, Platonism is a word that I use. And actually, it is a word. It is the philosophy or the ideology of Plato. And I use Platonism as the true source of where communism comes from. Because Platonism was the original plan and the original idea. That's exactly where the statist type of government and that idea came from. Anybody that has read his book, Plato, The Republic, then would know that that is the very first book that ever talked about communism or a state form of rule. And anybody that wants to give Marx and Engels credit, they plagiarize so much of the Republic that, you know, they just kind of put their own little spin. And one of the interesting things, if you've ever read Marx and Engels' Communist Manifesto, you will find that Marx believed that all labor was equal. Now, I want to pose this to you. I don't know what you do, but let's say you're a brain surgeon, or let's say you're an engineer, or let's say you're a lawyer. And Marx says all labor is equal. And I don't know if if you're not a lawyer, but you know have a legal problem, would you just go to any lawyer? And Thomas Sowell kind of points this out, that if you're having brain surgery, you want to go to the best. You don't want to go to the guy that kind of, you know, was helped along because, you know, he wasn't smart enough, wasn't qualified to be there, but because of some statistical demographic type of thing, that person was advanced in the medical field and was able to get a license to become a brain surgeon. I don't think you would want that. So in that little chasm or in that little paradigm, all labor is not equal. All lawyers are not equal. And Adam Smith pointed this out. But Marx believed that all labor was equal, that even in contrast to the guy that cleans the facility or the person that in Russia, there were people that, because everybody had a job in Russia, people that did hall monitoring in hotels to make sure that those visitors or foreigners didn't, you know, sneak out or what have you. So they had to keep record of every time you came and left and where you went out the exit, went down the elevator. So these monitors that kind of kept track of all the foreigners, they're equal to the brain surgeons. They're equal to the guy that's splitting the atom. I don't think so. But that was an assertion of Marx and Engels, that all labor was equal. And so I believe that's an insult to anybody that spends years and years like a doctor or a physicist or what have you in asserting that they're basically just as equal to the value of society as the guy that never went to school and decided to pick up a trade. And yeah, he may be a great painter and his painting may be really worth something, but I don't think his worth is necessarily equal. We all have a uniqueness and we all offer something, and being able to find that niche as Adam Smith really pointed out, that it's how you differentiate yourself and how you improve in your process and those types of things that help you rise above everybody else. And so you may become a very valued painter, but that doesn't mean that you're saving lives and people are going to run to you to save their life. They may want your art on their wall, but those things are fleeting and those things are subjective as well. But I will say that in contrast in labor and in contrast with Marx and Engels' concept of all labor being equal, I think that's a big insult to you. But that is the philosophy that is being rammed down the world's throat, and that's where we're all heading. And as I reported last week, that Finland had abandoned the equal pay thing, well, that's, you know, they're realizing it doesn't work. It's a very destructive role model, and Bernie is trying to inject that here. Are we idiots? Do we not know what's going on in Finland or what's happened around the world in history, that these things have always failed? Why is it that these bad ideas keep coming back? Well, we'll have to get into more of this when we get back, but I just want you to know that I will be back right after word from our sponsors. So thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. I'm working with key leaders and patriots and setting up rodeos for Republic Review in Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, and North Dakota for this election cycle. We're trying to promote engagement between you and your public servants so that you can start demanding their fulfillment of their oath of office to support and defend the Constitution. If you're beginning to understand what Republic Review can do and how it works, then America needs your help. More importantly, if you live in one of these states or know any patriots or patriotic leaders, like an elected official, a grassroots leader, or someone who is politically active, then please reach out to me on Facebook or email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. We know that if we can get a strong attendance by both the candidates and the electorate, we will make an impact. It is our intent to get one and hopefully all of these states to call for Republic Review. If we can get this audit process started, I promise you we will make America great once and for all. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Well, we come right back, and I wanted to talk about the politics of the day. As a matter of fact, so that you understand where we're at and why we're in this position, I have to kind of create this picture for you that there is an involvement between our politics, religion, education, entertainment, and every facet of our life. There is no doubt that organizations that you may even think, because I will tell you that when I have ran into and tried to engage what you would consider a conservative organization, they have actually backed off and they said, you know what, we don't want to make a position on that because we believe that the direction we're going is the best way. And this organization, just for example, let's say this organization has been around, which one has been 50, 60 years, and they believe that what they're doing and their plan and their policies are the best. And this is not an organization that I'm currently working with. So I just want you to understand that this is something I've ran into in the past. And I have found that it is more self-preservation than it has anything to do with really trying to fix the problem and contributing to a solution. That some of these really old-time organizations, or at least this one particular that happens to be the number one opponent to the Convention of States group, are groups that are out there. And I understand why they're an opponent of them, but I do not understand why they continue to go down the path of the status quo. And the question I have to ask you is, do you really believe that the current process of our elections and the court systems and everything else is how we're going to win our battles? Because we've been losing at every turn. It seems like Soros is far more willing to spend his money than your local businesses in your county. I will just tell you that the county I live in, there are, 37,000 businesses in the county I live in. Just 37,000. And that is a lot of maybe ma and pa businesses, but there's a lot of money involved in just in the little county. And I'm not in D.C., Chicago, or what have you. The importance here is to understand that these businesses play a key role in defending their political or their little political turf, I'll call it that. If they're not defending their political turf, then somebody like Soros is going to come in and he's going to pay for. And guess what? He's really not paying for most of the money that's going into the effort. If you look at where the money goes to paying for a lot of these little pawns and lieutenants and sergeants that are out there in the field working in a lot of these types of organizations, Antifa or what have you, where he's pouring some money into these, he's only paying for actual events and those types of things. Most of the money is going or coming to these people because they are on welfare and your tax dollar entitlement programs. Isn't that nice? So actually, you're funding these things. We're funding these things. And so when I say it is in every facet of our life, as I talked about, either it was last week or the week before, I talked about the circle of protection and how religion is involved in trying to abdicate their responsibilities and letting government do this. And they're telling their parishioners and so forth. Now, you may live in a great area where you may have a great pastor, but the organization that he may be paying into for whatever support, administrative support, or what have you, is probably a part of this circle of protection where they are advocating and spending money and getting the government to increase their welfare programs so that your pastor doesn't have to spend his money on supporting those who are down on their luck or who need some welfare assistance or what have you. Because technically, if you're aware, Madison and the framers felt that that was religion's responsibility, and it is. That's even Christ said that. He didn't say to have the state, you know, take care of the widows and the elderly. He said that that was supposed to be on you, that you would always have the poor and you'd have these widows and so forth, and you needed to take care of them. And when he said, as you've done to the least of these, you've done it unto me, right? I mean, and again, this isn't about the religious side. This is how government is taking over the religious roles. And so they're in every facet of our lives, to include how much water you're using for your toilet, how much or the type of filaments or energy or the process of energy and lighting your home and so forth. As we started this whole process last Friday, I basically mapped this thing out with three documents in 1776, that the three documents that literally created the foundation of this future war was the Declaration of Independence and the Wealth of Nations. Both of those documents came out in 1776. And what else came out in 1776? The Charter for the Illuminati. Adam Weishaupt admitted, and he clearly put out, what they were planning on doing as far as a public perspective. There were obviously lots of things that were withheld that will never see the light of day. But I will tell you that that was the beginning of getting organized and saying, you know what, we have the opportunity here to, you know, start moving forward and literally taking control, because the world was becoming much smaller at that point in time, especially as we kind of experienced maybe the First World War, where Britain was fighting America as well as France, as well as a few other, I believe, European nations, because we got funding from Holland. We got maybe a little assistance from Spain. So it wasn't like everybody wasn't involved in it, but it was, I think, the first glimpse of a world war. And it really didn't end until, when was the Treaty of Galt, I think, or Ghent? I mean, it was 1813, 1814. 1814 was when that Revolutionary War of ours ended, because that was when we finally got Britain out of our knickers and basically, I would say, finally honoring the treaty and no longer harassing us, because we actually did kick some butt. And they realized that they did not have the ability to project their power. And had they had the technology today, things would have been different. But back in those days, like I said, technology extending force was kind of equal. The farmer with a musket and a pistol, flintlock pistol or what have you, that's about what the army had. It's not the same thing today. Technology has completely given the government a huge advantage, and that's why I tell people that if you think you're going to be able to fight the government with the guns you've got, there's just no way you're going to be able to do that. You might be able to defend yourself, but you cannot fight a resistance. There's no way we can win liberty back with the direction and technology that we're going. And that's why this is so important in understanding this. So as we know, and I also talked about, that the French Revolution was kind of like the first kickoff of the communist play. They just didn't understand that Napoleon, using demagoguery, was going to rise. And obviously they didn't read Plato's Republic, so they didn't guard themselves from a demagogue rising up and gaining power. So they lost the French Revolution to Napoleon. They then, through academic processes, they actually took over Germany, and they were able to actually convince the Germans to become socialist or communist at that point. And I find it fascinating when you look at what they ended up doing. They had a social security program in Germany, and it bankrupted them, and it's bankrupting us. But because we have the ability to just create fiat money, just like they did, but by leveraging it throughout the world, it is what is sustaining us. And that is what is going to end up breaking us, because anybody that looks at the unfunded liability of Social Security and so forth, you have to be completely reckless to not recognize the fact that spending that money in that manner, the way we're doing it, and continuing this program without ending it, is suicide to this nation. It is. I hate to bring up the third rail, but and it may be sacred to a lot of people, but we have a way of fixing this, and actually without hurting people. And Milton Friedman in the 80s talked about this. We can get into all of that tomorrow, because we're really running out of time, and I need to get back into the dialogue of why we're here and where we're going and how all of these things have stitched together over the past 200 years. This has been a very long, and that's why I say this can't be a grand conspiracy. There has to be an architect that has been playing the strings amongst all sorts of little conspiracies and cabals. We will be back tomorrow. I am G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and thank you for tuning in.